find in Parshas Boy that there's a significance of Layachretz Kalav Lashayne. Some significance given to the fact that the dogs did not bark, did not let out a sound during Makas Bechiris. Many before Hashem asked the obvious question, what exactly significance is there for the dogs not to bark? Many pshatim are given. The simplest pshat probably has to do with the fact that when dogs bite, it creates a fear. Some before Hashem, people get startled and nervous. And therefore, the chiddush of the pasuk was that no one even got that startledness or nervousness feeling during Makas Bechiris. Chassam Sofer says the point is that you only have the chiddush is that normally when the malachamov is in the city, the Gemara says in Baba Kamba, malachamov was about the year, the dogs start to make a lot of noise. So the chiddush over here is, after Pekin, there was no noise. But I heard from Rabbi Feiner a very nice word from the Shem, the Talmud Rebbe. The Talmud Rebbe asks the Kasha, it says, what was the schar for the dogs for not barking? So it says later on in the Torah that all the velas go to the dogs. That's a great reward. All that free meat goes to the dogs. What's the reward for the frogs who jumped into the fire? They got arichas yamim. Okay, it must be nice to have a long life as a frog, but I would much rather a free life pass to all the meat you can eat. So the Talmud Rebbe asked, why was it the frogs got arichas yamim and the dogs got the meat? So he said, b'shem the Talmud Rebbe, that's a lot harder to keep your mouth closed than it is to jump into a burning building. The interesting insight in life. It takes a lot of iskabrus, even for a dog, to keep your mouth shut, not to do what you're supposed to do. Dogs are supposed to bark, and they have to control themselves. We as humans like to talk, and we have to control ourselves. So yes, doing acts of heroism, like jumping into fire, is a big deal. But Zok, the Talmud Rebbe, but keeping your mouth closed is also a very big deal, and perhaps maybe even a bigger deal, which is why the dogs got free meat for life, while the Tzvadeh only got Arichas Yom. But in the beginning, towards the beginning part of the parasha, when Klai Yisrael was preparing to leave Mitzrayim, and the tide is finally turned. And what happens? The pasuk tells us that Moshe goes over to the Jewish people and he says, I have a request from you, a bakasha. Daber no, please. Personal favor. What's my personal favor? I ask you to go to your Mitzri neighbor, Vishalu Ishme Esreyu. I'm asking you, please, can you kindly ask and borrow from your neighbor? So the Gemara in Brachos points out that this is a lashon bakasha. It's a request, it's not a commandment. Why was it not a commandment? So the Zayim L'Tayr, Abdam Tzoratzkin, has a beautiful idea. It fits in with my narrative that I started in Pasha Shemais, and we'll have to end, well, this week's Pasha's Bashalach, because that's really the end of the story, is that there's so much to compare the Mitzrayim Shibud to the Holocaust. And points out Abdam Tzoratzkin, this is one as well. Says Abdam Tzoratzkin, you know why it was so hard for the Mitzrayim to ask money from the Jews to ask money for the Mitzrayim? He compares it to war reparations after the Holocaust. You're going to think that you're going to give me a few dollars, and those few dollars are going to exempt you from all the horrible things you did over the last 100 or 200 years to my grandparents and to my parents. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, whose Yahrzeit was just earlier this week, he was of the opinion that you're not supposed to take war reparations for after the Holocaust, because he thought that by taking war reparations, it's as if you're saying to the world that for the money they'll pay, all is forgiven and all is forgotten for what they did. And he thought that's just not fair, that's not right, and therefore he held there's a hashkafic issue with taking war reparations. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to quote that often from his father, who held like that. But Reb Zalman Soroskin points out, it was hard. The Jews didn't want to go over to the Mitzrayim and ask them for the money, because that would almost be saying that this is like a forgiveness. And therefore it was difficult, and therefore it's bakash. That's how Reb Zalman Soroskin points out the pshat in the pasuk. But Rashi quotes the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm asking you because I have to deal with Avraham Avinu. Because if I don't have you ask for the money and you don't retrieve the money, Avraham Avinu is going to be mad at me, because he's going to say to me, you made a deal with me in the Brit Milah, I'm sorry, that they're going to work. And that part you kept, but you didn't keep the part of Baruch Hashkod. Well, that's Rashi quoting a very famous Gemara in Brachos. Asks all the Mefarshim. And let's say Avraham Avinu wasn't in the equation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to keep his end of the deal. It sounds like he's only keeping his end of the deal because Avraham Avinu is going to give him flack for not keeping his end of the deal. Hashem has to keep his end of the deal because Hashem has to keep his end of the deal. So perhaps the pshat is like this. Perhaps I think one can answer is that when it says in the pasuk of Achu Chen Yetsu B'chush Gadol, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us and to Moshe Rabbeinu is what I call R'chush Gadol is not what you call R'chush Gadol. You think R'chush Gadol means with loads of money. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think it's healthy. And I don't think Klai Yisrael will do well leaving Mitzrayim, starting off as Am Yisrael with bags of money. I promise R'chush Gadol. R'chush Gadol doesn't mean money. R'chush Gadol means you're going to have mitzvahs, a couple of mitzvahs, and you're going to have the beauty of your family. You're going to have the same way you came to Mitzrayim, you're going to leave Mitzrayim. But I didn't mean loads of money, because I think money is a bad idea. I think it's a recipe for disaster. To start off as Am Yisrael, being focused solely on the money, is not going to end in a good place. So what does Avraham Avinu's taina back to Kadosh Baruch Hu? Avraham Avinu says, Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't be so worried. I had a lot of money. I was a very wealthy guy. Avraham Avinu was very wealthy, again, the latter part of his life. And says Avraham Avinu, I was able to manage because what did I use my money for? I didn't live for myself, I gave to others. I wasn't living just for me. It wasn't that I was just making myself wealthier. I used my money to spread Kriyat Shemayim. I used my money to be able to teach and to educate and to build a Kiruv house. I was able to show people how Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Avraham Avinu was saying to Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't be so worried. They can do it. Because if their focus on the money is not about personal gain, but rather the focus is on how to help others, the true happiness that can be accomplished from money is when you give it to someone else. There was a study done with a group of kids, and they gave them $20. And they told one group, you could do whatever you want with the money, and one group they said, you need to spend it on someone else. Buy someone else lunch, buy your parents a present, buy your friend. And those who bought something for someone else were much happier than those who spent it on themselves. We all know that when you give to someone else, it's the greatest feeling of happiness. Right? Money can't buy happiness. That's true. That's if it's for yourself. But if you give to others, you can find a lot of happiness. So Avraham Avinu was telling Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't worry. You can have money. It's okay to have money. Because money, if spent properly, if spent correctly, doesn't necessarily have to end in a bad way. It could be very productive. Look at me. I could do it. I did it. I had a lot of money. I got from Para. I got plenty of money. And I was able to figure out a way to spend it in a very healthy way, balancing my life. So that's perhaps what the Gemara means. Avraham Avinu said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, no, don't give them the real ruchosh. Give them the real deal. So I gave this shiur yesterday. Someone pointed out to me, he says, clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu was right and Moshe Rabbeinu was wrong. How do we know? Because the Chet HaEgel. Medrash tells us that. What happened to the Chet HaEgel? Klaus had too much money and they didn't know what to do with it. And therefore, they built an eagle. So perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu, although was trying to justify it, perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew better. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, no, I know, trust me, I know how I wired these people. But there's a beautiful Gemara in Saita. The Gemara in Saita tells us that while everyone was busy gathering Bizas Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu was busy with Atzmas Yosef. The Gemara in Saita says, why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is considered a Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvahs. A man of wisdom grabs Mitzvahs. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Everyone else was busy gathering money from the Mitzrayim's house. Moshe Rabbeinu was busy with Atzmas Yosef. Asks all the Mefarshim, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is one of them, but it was also a mitzvah. Why was Moshe any more special than Bnei Yisrael? Bnei Yisrael was also doing a mitzvah. Bizas Yam was a mitzvah. So, granted, the Briskerov writes it wasn't. Briskerov thought Bizas Yam was not a mitzvah at all. It was merely a rishos. It doesn't say tzivoy. But Rabbi Yaakov assumes not like that. He assumes it was a commandment. So why is this commandment more important than this commandment? Says the Sukkas David of David Kviat says that Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us the art of balancing life. You got to be able to do both. You got to be focused on the Biza, which is an important mitzvah, and you got to be focused on the Atzmas Yosef, which is also an important mitzvah. Says David Kviat, that's what Moshe's greatness was. Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvos. He did plural. We live in a life where we're focused on only one thing. Either we're doing this, we're doing that, we can't multitask. Moshe Rabbeinu taught us, you can do both. You can be focused on mammonis, you can be focused on spirituality, and the two can live together. You can be focused on, yes, I want to get the money, I want to become wealthy, but I am not losing sight of what it's all about. It's this balancing act. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was afraid. Avraham Avinu somewhat calmed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Moshe Rabbeinu taught us a third possibility, a balancing act. You can have money, use money, but you make sure it doesn't overtake your other priorities. It's a balancing act. Take both mitzvahs and live them together. Make sure you can do both at the same time. Maybe that's what Moshe Rabbeinu taught Klal Yisrael this week's parasha, the godless of balancing. Yes, because Baruch was nervous to give Klal Yisrael money. Avraham Avinu said it's okay. Moshe said no, it's even more okay because you got to learn how to do two things at once. You got to learn how to manage your money in a healthy way while managing your spirituality as well in a healthy way. But you find in the parasha that the significance of Klal Yisrael's interaction with money wasn't only Ben Asan HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk says that Klal Yisrael found Chein Be'enei Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim were so overtaken by Jews that they just wanted to lend out all their things. Says the Sif Zechama, where did this newfound love come from for the Jewish people? Says the Sif Zechama, because when the Mitzrayim walked out of Makas Choshech, they said to themselves, wow, why isn't our homes empty? The Jews could have taken everything and anything they wanted, and no one would have said boo. They didn't touch a thing, not a penny, not a dime was taken. Mitzrayim were blown away by that. They were in a spall. They were impressed by the honesty that the Jews had in Mitzrayim, where they didn't take what wasn't theirs, even though they could have justified it, and they could have easily have done it, that would that impress the Mitzrayim. So perhaps what the Torah is telling us is that our mominess involvement has not only been Adam Lamakim, it's not Atzan HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It involves the people around us, right? Every single time a Jew does something somewhat questionable, it makes it to the front page of the newspaper. Everyone loves to you know, make fun of the Jews and their corruption and desire for mamonos. All these things always make it to front and center news. But perhaps sometimes when we go the other way, when we're more machbin, not to make a chal Hashem with our mamonos, not to do things which are questionable, perhaps even illegal, therefore Klal Yisrael stands out, and it's a Kiddush Hashem. And that's how we gain Chein Be'ini Hashem. But what we find is in all our major redemptions, there's always an emphasis maybe not to look at money. For example, at the end of the Purim story, the Pasuk tells us at the end of the Purim story, Megillah says, "Uva'avizo lo'y shalchu asyadam." Don't touch the money. You won, you defeated Achashver, great. Don't touch any money. Why? Because often we get caught up when we're supposed to be moving on to a new phase in life, a new stage, a newfound freedom. It's not worth it. It's not kedai to focus on the material value because it's often going to stray us away from what we need to focus on. Rav Avinu will say, no, they can do both. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, no, I think when we're getting into this phase of life, where we're now moving on, we're leaving, we're starting new, it's perhaps a lot easier to move on when you're not so bogged down, perhaps, with the Taivas HaMamet. Rashi tells us that, why did they have Makas Choshech? So Rashi says, because of the Rishoyim, the evil people that didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. So I was always bothered by this Rashi. What makes them so evil? Rishoyim. Let's put ourselves in their shoes for just about a second. If we lived in Mitzrayim, we were raised in Mitzrayim, our grandparents lived in Mitzrayim, we worked in Mitzrayim, we saw Mitzrayim, and finally the tide starts to change, and you start to win, and they start to lose. Wouldn't you also be okay with staying put? Well, let's be very honest here. Let's not be better than thou, right? We'd also be like, okay, great. They don't know any better. This is the only country they ever knew of. They never went anywhere else. They never went to Eretz Yisrael. They never saw another society. This is all they knew. So obviously Mitzrayim wasn't a great setup because the Mitzrayim were oppressing you. But if the oppression stops, so then you're like, hey, this is all I know. This is the only world I'm familiar with. So I don't blame anyone for wanting to stay. Why does the Torah call them Rishoyim?
But it didn't stop. It was so fast.
Yeah, but during Choshech, the Makas weren't going on already. The Makas stopped. The Makas haven't stopped. The Shibbut stopped for years already. For months already. The Shibbut stopped already Rosh Hashanah time, the Gemara says. So they're already sitting now 6 months without working. So it's a pretty nice. There's nothing better than watching your enemies suffer. This is like really, you know, this is great. You know, they got front row seats to destruction. This is really great. So I found that Yaakov Kamenetsky has a beautiful idea. He says, you know what their mistake was? Their mistake wasn't this, like I'm suggesting. Their mistake was they said to themselves, Moshe, you're wrong. It's too early to leave. The math doesn't work out. And the math doesn't work out. We were supposed to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. It's only 210. So the time to Moshe Rabbeinu was, you're a Navi Sheker. You're not right. The math doesn't work out. We were told this, and it doesn't work out. So Zakti B'Yakov, so why do they deserve to be killed? Because if you're not Maimin B'Toyro U'B'Nevi'im, then you can't be part of Klal Yisrael. This was all an intro to becoming Am Yisrael. If out of the gate you're not going to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu, this is not going to work. You can't be part of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the leader. If you don't trust your leaders, forget it. It's not going to work. I would even go as far as Rabbi Yaakov doesn't say this. It's not begeder punishment. It's like we said by Kairach. It's a reality. If you can't be part of the system, then you can't be part of the system. If you're not going to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to say he's making things up. He's lying. You can't trust him. Then how are you going to be part of Klal Yisrael? Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the leader for the next whole amount of years. And you're going to doubt everything he says? It's not going to work. So maybe that's why they're called Rishoyim. Because they did their arguing on Moshe Rabbeinu. That gives you a title of a Rosh. We found a similar Loshen in Rashi in Sefer Bereishis, where the Roye Loit disagreed with the Roye Avram. And I pointed out then also why the Roye Loit called Rishoyim. They have an Aronis Machloikis, whether or not Loit got Yerusha or not. The reason why they're called Rishoyim is because Avram Avinu already paskin that they're not. When you get a psak from someone and he tells you that you're wrong, and you say, oh, well, I know better, that makes you a Rosh. That's not a work. It's not the way it works in this society. You want to say, well, I know more than you, I'm a bigger rabbi than you, I don't know. But if you go and you get a psak and you say, I'm going to do what I want, that's Taka Rosh. That's what these people did. Moshe Rabbeinu told them, listen guys, I understand, Kosh Baruch Hu told us, don't worry, he made the work harder, therefore the years work out, whatever the pshat is. But it was coming from Moshe Rabbeinu. If you're not going to trust in Moshe Rabbeinu, B'Nevi'im, Zakti B'Yakov, it's not going to work. Rav Pam has an idea which I think might also answer this kasha. These people in Mitzrayim had very short vision. What were they thinking? Oh, right now things are good. What's the long-term plan? The long-term plan is to stay in Mitzrayim? They knew that wasn't the long-term plan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them from the get-go, the plan is to get out of here. So why are they so much enjoying now? Because short vision. Short vision is I see just what's in front of me. I see right now, we're winning, they're losing. That's all I care about. But in life, you have to have the big picture. Says Rav Pam, that was the mistake of Pare. He had such short vision. Every time the Makkah stopped, right away he changed his mind. Why don't you look at the big picture and say, one second, this keeps on happening to me. Clearly there's someone else running the show. Says Rav Pam, that's not the way Pharaoh's brain was wired. He was thinking short vision. Right now, right in front of me. Often in life, we think about what's right in front of us. We don't look at the long-term picture. Says Rapam, many times when a person's in a tzara and the tzara gets a little better, they stop davening. Because, oh, so it's already better. That's very short-term. That's not long-term. And there's a famous joke where the guy's not religious and he has a very important meeting in the city and it has to start at a certain time and he's driving and he can't find the parking spot. And he looks and he looks and he tells God, okay, God, I'm desperate. I need this meeting. If you find me a parking spot, I'm going to become religious. And he finds the parking spot. Never mind, I found the parking spot. And that was the guy's story, right? Never mind, they found the parking spot. God deals off. That's short vision, right? We only think about the right now. Right now, I need something and I don't get it, I don't get it. Says Rapan, that's the mistake. And that's perhaps what these Rishoyim, if we have the right to call them that, their mistake was they weren't looking long term. They were just looking at right now, things are good. But this is not a real life, living in Mitzrayim, in a city that is not our values. But right now, things are good. When a person has short, very short vision, that's when he gets himself into trouble. Perhaps that's Pshat and Rashi, why they have such a strong, and that's why they even deserve to be killed. They deserve death. If Steinman points out, there should have been, Rabbi Yaakov writes, 2 million people died in Makas Choshech, 2 million Jews. 2 million, that's the number he writes. Said Reb Shteinman, where were all these Levayas? You know what it's like to put together 2 million Levayas? There's no psukim, there's nothing. He asks as a kasha. But Rabbi Yaakov does write, he says this perhaps might be the answer to the Holocaust. Many, you don't think after Makas Choshech, everyone woke up and said, wow, where are all these Jews? What happened to them? This was supposed to be a high time for Klal Yisrael. All of a sudden now they got 2 million Jews taken away. Says Rabbi Yaakov, this is perhaps the forerunner for the Holocaust when massive numbers of people that you have no idea what they did or didn't do wrong. You have no idea what they deserved or didn't deserve. And you just wake up one day and they're gone. And Klal Yisrael had to deal with it then. He says, Rabbi Yaakov, it's a nechama. It means a geula is coming soon. That's where Rabbi Yaakov ends off his piece. Just like in the Holocaust, when many millions, we can't start giving reasons of why great Gedolim died or regular people died, even though many people offer their own reasons, which I think is a disrespect to the Mason and it's a borderline kfira to tell me why the Holocaust happened. But we don't know why anything happened. But Kosh Baruch Hu took away a lot of very, very special people. Whenever that happens, says Rabbi Yaakov, you know that right behind that is the Gula. So that's where Rabbi Yaakov says a little bit of a comforting ending. The Makas Choshech says Rabbi Yaakov perhaps is right after that was the Gula. Maybe Zakhtu Rabbi Yaakov, perhaps this is supposed to tell us that right after the Holocaust, maybe sooner rather than later, is ultimately going to be the Gula Shlem. Okay. We left off.
Can I just ask a question for this week, please?
Yeah.
We discussed that, for instance, we're talking about Gula, so we said it's on Monday.
Yeah.
Sunday night, should we prepare it?
Yeah.
You said Sunday night, in regards to, maybe I guess, were we referring to Banish Mashas after?
No, I was referring to, well, again, Mukta's also Banish Mashas also, but even after Tzeis, either way. Let's say, for example, if Yom Tov is Monday and you want to start moving around your Lulav and Esrik Sunday night, it might be Talin Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. So let's pick up from there. Thank you for it's a good segue. We left off last week. We were talking about a machlokes rishonim between Rashi and Tosfos and Sukkah. To what is the status of a lulav on Yom Tov, not on Shabbos, on Yom Tov? What's the status of your average lulav on Shabbos, on Yom Tov? The Tosfos seems to write in Sukkah that a lulav on Yom Tov is muktzah. Why is it muktzah? Because it doesn't have a shame kli. Why can't it be muchan? Why can't you prepare it like you do stones and bricks? So we spoke about that. B'shem Rishon Mizalman and others attempted to explain why you can't do that. But Taisus seems to be very clear that a lulav is muktzah on Yom Tov. It's only mutter for the mitzvah. Rashi seems to hold not like that, even though Rashi might be contradictory, but Rashi seems to hold in Sukkah that a lulav is not muktzah. The status of a lulav is a kli. And since it's a kli, it can be moved at all times, at any times, it's never an issue of muktzah. So what we wanted to discuss based on this machlokes Rashi and Taisus is how would that impact Shabbos Sukkahs? Okay, and that Gemara Rashi and Taisus was talking about Yom Tov. On Yom Tov is a lulav muktzah, is a lulav not muktzah. We were masber that the reason why Rashi held a lulav is not muktzah on Yom Tov was because it has a purpose. It's chazi l'mitzvah. So why did Tosfos not hold like that? So we mentioned that Rabbi Soloveitchik and others explained that if the whole purpose of an object is merely to do a mitzvah, that does not make it considered chazi l'davar. That doesn't make it a kli. Meaning a kli is something that can be used for numerous or even mundane activities. If the whole usage of something is merely for a Shabbos type of experience, then it's not going to have a status of a kli. But the question was, what would Rashi say on Shabbos Shecholias Pesukos? Again, the starting point of Rashi is, since Rashi will tell you that on Yom Tov of Sukkot, I'm supposed to take my lulav, thank you, therefore my lulav has the status of a mitzvah, so perhaps on Sukkot it's not muktzah. What would Rashi hold on Shabbos Sukkot? Shabbos, l'maisa b'zman is that we don't take lulav, there is no mitzvah because of gzeirah d'rabbah, so therefore what would Rashi hold? Would Rashi say it's still a shame kli, because maybe in midaraisa I can shake lulav, or whatever the case may be, or would Rashi argue and say, no, vada not? It's not a kli today because today it's useless. Today it's a regular stick. On Sukkot, it's a stick that I use for a mitzvah. On today, it's just a stick. Sticks are muktzah. So I assumed that the Chayyur Rashi would agree. And Rashi would say that on Shabbos, Avada, a lulav is mutzah. And that's what Rashi said in our sugya, in the 19th parak of Shabbos. Rashi made such a comment that a lulav on Shabbos would be mutzah. Rashi in Sukkah said, a lulav is not mutzah. Yeah, that's talking about a lulav on Sukkahs. On a regular day of Sukkahs, Avada, a lulav is not mutzah. Why is it not mutzah? Because you can use it for the mitzvah. But on Shabbos, where you can't use it for a mitzvah, so Avada, Rashi would agree, it becomes mutzah. Why is this relevant? Because we mentioned there's a machloikis achreinim between the Ramah and the Taz. The Ramah paskens in Shulchan Aruch that the status of a lulav on Shabbos is like stones. It's muktza machmas gufay. It's considered useless and it has no shame kli. No shame kli. It's muktza. That's the Ramah shita. The Taz disagrees. The Taz says, I don't know what the difference is. Why is a shofar any different than why is the lulav any different than a shofar? The same way the Taz writes that a shofar is all agreed. It's a kli shemalach del iser. If you leave a shofar on a bed, you can move the shofar on Shabbos. Why is the lulav not like a shofar? So we pointed out, as does Mr. Berurah, there's a very big difference between the two. A shofar has a shame kli. Shofar you can use for scooping. You can use for drinking out of. Not that I would suggest it, but you could. You know. I had a gevaldik shaila in my shul this Rosh Hashanah, where the second day Yom Tif, right, so we blew shofar. After the first 30 kailas, the batakeya looks at me, and he realizes he left his Q-tips in the shofar. He had about 3 Q-tips, those long Q-tips, to clean out the shofar from spit. He left them in the shofar. The question was, now, what do we do? Nothing like good pressure on Rosh Hashanah day. You know, everyone's staring at you. You got to make a decision.
You should have fainted.
You got to make a decision. So I thought it was okay. I thought it was okay for a couple of reasons. So I said, let's just continue.
What was the shiloh?
So the shiloh
was the
color. Right. So al chatzitza, it's not a problem. Als it's nishtana, the sound of the shofar, it could be a problem. So I asked about the keya. I said, do you think it changed the sound? He said, actually, the shofar was even better this time. The keilos were clearer.
So it
changed it le-toivosoi, not le-gereyusa.
And who's that tolly on? The people who hear it?
Right. So l'chayr, it should be tolly. Right, it should be tolly. So that was the question, what to do. So I had to make an executive decision. So I decided to keep on going. I thought it was fine. But...
Could you take
We took it out. We took them out, and we continued.
It's not muktzah, the Q-tips?
No, you can use them. You can use them to clean out the shofar.
You didn't have to clean out the kailos.
I didn't think so. The truth is, you only really need 30 kailos anyways. So what I decided to do was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me a good idea, Baruch Hashem. So I decided at the end of davening, because there was one guy making trouble. He was saying, oh, it's a shaila, maybe we're not yetz. Okay. So I said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to blow 30 tikkias at the end of davening for the women who came late. There's always ladies who come every year. There's always ladies who come late, and they missed the beginning of something. So you know what? We're going to blow 30 tekiahs just to be mighty the women who came late, and everyone else should listen also to the last 30 tekiahs. So after Yom Tov, when I had a chance to speak to different people, so the consensus of most of the rabbanim I spoke to thought it was not a problem. Rav Shachter held it wasn't a problem. Rav David Cohen told me you got to test it out. You got to take the shofar again, line up 20 people, blow the shofar with the Q-tip. But I said, forget it. That's not happening. I'm not doing that. But the consensus of most rabbanim thought that the vada the shofar was okay. But that's you can't make up these types of shailas. They're not any of the shailas in Tshuva Sforim. I looked around. No one even talks about such a shaila. I guess it's a milsa de l'shchiach. But in any case, so the shofar itself. Is it clear? You can use the shofar.
Welcome to your first Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, nothing like being the first Rosh Hashanah where everyone's staring at you on the second day. Oh, wow, that's got to be a kapar for something. Okay. In any case, so that's the shailah. So Zog the Birkas Avram, let's start from over here. Zog the Birkas Avram, Avram Erlinger, to Rosh Hashiva today in Kol Torah. So he says something which I mamash don't understand at all. I really don't know what he's talking about. He wants the taina that Rashi and Tosfos and Sukkah are going to impact the Machlokes Magen Avraham and Taz. Again, Machlokes Magen Avraham and Taz is what's the status of a shofar, what's the status of a lulav on Shabbos? The Taz says it's a klisha malachto iser. The Magen Avraham, the Ramah says it's muktzah machmas gufa. So Pashup Shat, that Machlokes means to say is, do you hold it as a shame kli, or do you hold it doesn't have a shame kli? Zogt Rav Avraham Erlinger, that's mamish the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos and Sukkah. Rashi in Sukkah that holds that a lulav has a shame kli, so he'll hold here also it has a shame kli. So therefore it has a shame kli. Therefore it's a kli shemalach del iser. While the Ramah would hold like Tosfos that a lulav is not a kli, and if a lulav is not a kli, therefore it's muktzah machmas gufa. So he writes number one. He says l'chayim medivi Rashi kan the kasa to have a kli Rashi in Sukkah that says it's a kli hayinira the gam b'shabbes in the dayma el kli shemalach del iser. That's a huge jump he just made. He just said because Rashi holds it's a kli on Sukkahs, Rashi's going to hold a kli. It's a kli on Shabbos. Mechadesa on Shabbos, it's useless, garnish, nothing. On Yom Tov, I could use it. So Rashi will argue
on. Use it for on Yom Tov other than being a lulav.
So Rashi will tell you that's enough to make it a kli. Tosfos will argue on that prat. But to say it because he holds like that in Yom Tov, he holds like that in Shabbos, to me that's a massive jump. I would argue that there's a significant difference between Sukkot and Shabbos. Sukkot, you shake the lulav, Shabbos, you don't shake the lulav. But yet he argues he thinks not. He says that once it's a kli, it never becomes ice kli. I will loy bottom and the same kli.
If you were to shake the lulav on Shabbos,
it's a big shiloh. Rabbi Chanan talks about this, and there's a Rashba like this. That's a big question. The Chazal have the power to stop the mitzvah, or just to stop you? I mean, can he change the Torah? The Torah says, "Lachach l'mchem b'yemirish." The Torah says, "Take a lulav." So Chazal said, "You can't." Okay, so now what does that mean? If I go behind Chazal's back, so I might be over l'sasser because I'm not listening to Chazal. But there is a tzatzat. That might be one of the pshatim. That's right. That's one of the ways of learning it. That because be'etzim there is a mitzvah. I can't do it. So therefore it has a shem. What's a kavuchim?
In other words, they listen. For sure, you can do it. If you can't do it, if you can do it on Yom Tov, then for sure you can do it on Shabbos.
Because
the Yisr is not there on Shabbos, like he's saying.
But there is. Practically speaking, I can't shake a lulav on Shabbos.
Only midrabanan, but midaraisa you could.
Right, but that's the question. How do you define the status of a kli? Do you look at it in the Torah's theoretical or the practical?
It's only Shabbos the first day. Shabbos,
correct.
And it's also the rabban.
That's correct. That's true. Okay. At least outside the mikdash, right? Right.
According to Rashi, that says it becomes a kli.
Mm-hmm.
What if you bought the lulav before Sukkah starts? Obviously,
mm-hmm.
Then there's Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Sukkah hasn't started yet. Sukkah is Monday.
Yep.
But you've already designated that lulav as your lulav for Sukkot. Is it a kli for
Shabbos? I think it depends.
Does it have to experience the Sukkot?
I think that's a good shayla. I think it depends on how you learn this Rashi. If you learn the Rashi that because it's going to be used for a mitzvah, that's enough to make it, so then it would. If you learn the way other people want to suggest, that because it was used, that's a very good nafkamina. Yeah, I think that's a good pshat. Is the pshat because it's going to be or because of what? Because he writes over here that you can't take off the shame kli. I'm not sure why.
When does it become a kli?
That's right. That's be the nafkamina in your case. But I'm not sure why you can't take off the shame kli. It was usable. It's not usable. Well, yesterday was.
What if a kli breaks?
That's right. It loses the shame. It loses the shame kli. Yeah. From day to day, for sure you could. What?
Within the context of the mitzvah, perhaps, that once it's
the effects
of mitzvah,
it doesn't, even though. That's true in Kedushas HaMitzvah, but not necessarily in shame kli. I agree with you. A lulav is a lulav. It has whatever you can't be disrespectful to a lulav even after you do the mitzvah. But als hilchas kalim, I don't know. That might be good for the machlekes Rashi and Tosfos. I think you're right.
I'm not sure it's Friday. I'm not sure if I took lulav or not.
So you take without a.
So I can take a banish mushers.
Right.
So it's a clear banish mushers.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that today, about how Benesh Moshe. Yeah, hopefully we'll talk about it. So again, I don't understand his cheshbon. I would have disagreed with his cheshbon. I thought not like that. And then I was happy to find, I found a number two. I just wanted to put it on print. It was my thought, but I found the sefer who says like me, so I figure I'll put it into print. The Gemara says in Brachas that there was a certain Amayor was complaining that he had this chedesh, and everyone said it over as their chedesh. You know. Plagiarism, right? So, and obviously, I don't know who this fellow is who wrote the sefer, but it's a kavitz chedushe Torah written by some kaila somewhere in Eretz Yisrael, where they write what I think is logical, which means to say is not like the Birkas Avram. Avram Erlinger thinks that if you asked Rashi, what would you say the status of a lulav on Shabbos is, Rashi would tell you it's a klishan lachlisa like the tas. I disagree. I don't think that's true. I think Rashi would tell you that on Shabbos it's muktzah machmas gufa, it's useless, it has no shame kli. On Tuesday, it is a kli. He writes, even though Rashi was the opinion that a lulav has a kli, that's only during the week. Why? Because it has a purpose. It has a tafkid to be used for a mitzvah. A lulav on a spring day is definitely muktzah, because it's useless. What are you going to do with a tree? It has no purpose. On Sukkot, it has a purpose, the Hainu Mitzvah. So therefore, Elo the Svele the Rashi, Shebechag HaSukkot, Kivin Sha'imin Hu L'Tashim Misha Adam, Teres Kli Lav, because it has a purpose, and now becomes a Kli. Dizal Mahus V'Hashem Shal Kli. That is the Taich, that is the definition of this Kli, Shul Mishamish, it serves man. V'Svele the Rashi, Da'av Tashim Shal Mitzvah Chashim Shimush L'Adam. Rashi, this is where Rashi and Taisis disagree, according to Rabbi Salavajic, is that Rashi holds, if the whole purpose is just for Mitzvah, that's enough to be called a purpose, while Taisis says not. You are not allowed to take the lulav nimsa. It's not there to do anything. It's useless on Shabbos. Therefore, it loses the status of a kli. If it's not made to serve man, it's merely a piece of wood. Umay de Rashi de b'Shabbos also l'talta alulav legamri. I feel it's a goof on the koymai. Okay, my shapasek haramohanal. Says him, I think it's partial like that. Avada Rashi is not arguing to say that it's a lula, it's a shame kli all the time. Avada not. The Ramah is 100% right. Rashi just means on a regular sukkah, on a regular day where you have the mitzvah, so then the fact that you have the mitzvah, it changes it to becoming a useful object. Mashenken on Shabbos. When you don't, then it's not. Then he brings the Gavaldik Araya. What is the makar of the Ramah? The Ramah says that a lulav on Shabbos is muktzah machmas gufa, it has no shame kli. What's the makar? Rashi. Rashi? How can Rashi be your makar? You just told me Rashi is the one that holds a lulav is a kli. The answer is no. Rashi holds a lulav is not a kli. On Shabbos it's not a kli. On Tuesday of Ad it's a kli. What was the Rashi? Rashi in Sukkah. What did Rashi in Sukkah say? Why is the lulav not muksa for a lady on Sukkahs? Because it's made for a man. Sukkah Vilna Gaon. What do you mean it's made for? Let's say it wouldn't be made for a man. So what do you see from Rashi? Rashi justifying why is the lulav not muksa for a woman? Sukkah Rashi because it's roi for a man. So since it's roi for a man, it's roi for a lady also. Frek de Vilna Gaon, what do you see from Rashi? That if it wouldn't be roi for a man, it would be roi for nobody, like Shabbos, then avad it's muktzah. I thought Rashi holds lulav aren't muktzah. The answer is parshat. Rashi meant lulav on a Shabbos is muktzah. Lulav on a yomtiv, of course, is not muktzah, because lulav on a yomtiv has a purpose. The purpose is to shake it on yomtiv. So l'chayra, the machloikis Ramah and Taz has no bearing on the machloikis Rashi and Taisvis Ayas and Sukkah. It's a completely different issue. I did find.
Just remind me, according to Rashi, after you shake the lulav, it's also still not muktzah.
That's what we're going to get to right now. We're going to talk about that in a second. What happens according to Rashi? Well, not according to Rashi, but maybe according to the other Rishonim, we'll talk about what happens after you shake the lulav and the mitzvah is now over.
Right.
So I found an interesting. We'll get to that. We'll talk about it.
For you. But for you.
No, we'll get it. But according to Rashi, if it's. Yeah, but same way Rashi says that it's not muktzah because it was not muktzah for me, therefore it's not muktzah for my wife. So it's not muktzah for him, it's not muktzah for me. Same
question. But there's a difference because it's not muktzah for me, it's not muktzah for my wife because you didn't do the mitzvah yet. But once you did the mitzvah, then maybe it's.
But it's still. But that guy still didn't do the mitzvah.
He didn't, but I did.
Again, but if I did the mitzvah, so why is my wife allowed to shake the lulav? I did the mitzvah, it's over.
You
took a goof off? No, I think Rashi means that since for me it was never muktzah. Rashi seems to be saying that a lulav never takes on a status of muktzah, ever. Mm-hmm. So according to Rashi, you can move it around the whole Yom Tov as well. I found there's a pamphlet came out from Gershon Edelstein, the Rashiva in Ponovich. Mm-hmm. He wrote something for, I think it was his wife's yard site. He wrote a small pamphlet. And that pamphlet, he has a Gevaldik Ha'ara on our sugya. He writes, we said there's machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi holds that a lulav on Yom Tov is not muktzah. Taisus holds a lulav on muktzah is a lulav on yomtiv is muktzah. Frekt all the achroidim. Why is a lulav muktzah? It has a usage. So we explained that if the whole usage is dust l'shem shemayim, that doesn't become a usage. So frekt b'gershon and also in the gavaltik akasha, every siddur, every chumash, every sefer should be muktzah. What are you going to do with a siddur? Do spiritual things. That's muktzah. That's not enough. You got to be able to use it for regular things. So Frank Gershon Edelstein, if you're going to go like Taisvis and learn that the reason why it's muktzah is because it's only a spiritual purpose, what else are you going to do with a lulav besides for being Mekadosh Shem Shemayim? Nothing. What else are you doing with the Siddur? You're going to daven. Spiritual things. What do you do with the Sefer? Learn. Spiritual. Where's there the Gashmi part of these things? So Frank Gershon, it's an interesting kash. So he says in Gavaldik Keter, it's number 3, he writes, V'avsh Siddur v'sefer Torah eine muktzah. Why is every Siddur and every Torah and every Sefer muktzah? You're only using it for a mitzvah. A book is meant for reading. Now, the reason why you're reading is for the mitzvah, but lamaisa, a book is meant for reading. And that's what you're using it for. Why is anyone shaking this tree? Why would you shake this tree? There's no reason why you're shaking this tree. Why do people read books? Now, the reason why I'm reading this book versus a novel is because this book gives me Yirat Shamayim. Fine. That's the second step. But at the end of the day, I'm doing what books are meant to be doing. Books are meant to be read. So if it was Zaktib Gershon, that's why reading a book is not called doing it for spirituality. I'm reading a book because people read books. Why am I reading this book and not a different book? So perhaps this book gives me Yirat Shamayim, it gives me Shechan in the next world. But why am I shaking this wooden, palm branch? Why on earth am I doing this? No one ever does that. This whole makeup of working it, the whole shema she calls, is only the mitzvah. Then a taka can't become a shame clear. Interesting. Initially I thought it was a little out there, but the more you think about it, it makes a lot of sense.
Now this only applies to lulav, because it's a palm branch. But people did use branches for secular purpose.
Yes.
So it has...
Well, again, today, most of us are not going to be using these types of branches for anything else except...
Right, but they weren't writing about this today. This was, you know, when there were, I mean, people used palm branches for...
For brooms, maybe?
For brooms, for, to you know, fans.
Yep, I hear.
I mean, it has...
I guess back then there was... Tysus will tell you this is the only reason why you would use it. But then he's not going to move it then. Decorative will how it would stay in one place.
What do we say about the lulav? Said in the Torah, you have to shake the lulav. What does it say you have to shake the lulav?
No, therefore you shake the lulav, and after that it goes back to being muktzah. The muktzah is a short-lived experience. That's the way it tastes.
It's
a kli. It's a shame kli. Shame kli. So Tais will tell you, I'm okay with the lulav. Okay, so let's just get back into this. Again, we talked a little bit about this last week. This is really, again, page 2 is what we're supposed to really get to today. Page 1 is a hemshech from last week. So just keep that in mind where we're holding now. So we mentioned again...
It's number 3?
Yeah, that's where we're holding number 4. We covered some ground. So there's a Magen Avraham in Hilchos Lulav that's important. The Magen Avraham quotes his Darkei Moshe, the Ramah, who writes that there's Yushami. We spoke about this Yushami last week. We've got to get into it again this week. The Yushami says, Hey Nichu al Ha'aretz Osel L'Taltalei. Once you put your lulav down on the ground, you're not allowed to move it anymore. Game's over. Once you put the lulav down, the game is over. You're not allowed to move it anymore. That's the words of the Yushami. Now, what is the Yushami talking about? So, Pashup Shat, Yushami is talking about regular sukkahs. Sukkahs are Tuesday, sukkahs are Wednesday, not Shabbos, because we in Magen Avraham's world, didn't shake lulav on Shabbos. So he obviously doesn't mean Shabbos. He presumably means on Sukkot. And still the Yerushalmi, quoted by the Magen Avraham, says, if you have a lulav, once you put it down on the ground, you're not allowed to move it anymore. Mashma, what do you see from over here? The svirle that he holds, the la'acha gemar mitzvah's lulav, after you finish the mitzvah, in meinichu ala oritz, osir shov l'taltloi. Once you put it on the ground, you wouldn't be allowed to move it anymore. V'tzarechi, in fact, the Magen Avraham, why? The ha'kayim belon, ei muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos. We have a principle. You can't be muktzah for half a day. How is this lulav muktzah half a day? The first half a day, I'm allowed to use it to do the mitzvah. After 12 o'clock hits, and now I finish lulav, now it becomes muktzah from 12 o'clock till the next morning. That's a problem of a muktzah l'chatziyem. This was what we mentioned last week, so we mentioned according to Taishvist, it's not a kasha. According to Taishvist, it's not muktzah half a day, it's muktzah the whole day. It's just that I have a specific heter to move it to do the mitzvah. So according to Rashi, this is very troubling. Rashi would disagree with this. Rashi would say, you're right, it's not muktzah at all. But according to Taisus, it comes out, Taisus is pointing out that L'chayr it is muktzah. If it is muktzah, so what happens? Teretz is, it's muktzah the whole Yom Tif. I have a heter L'toich Mitzvah. Once the heter L'toich Mitzvah falls off, I go back to it being muktzah.
Why wouldn't you say the opposite? Since it's not part of the day that it is a mitzvah, therefore the whole day it's a mitzvah.
That's Mistama, what Rashi is going to tell you. Rashi would tell you that since there's a time and date where I'm allowed to use this lulav, therefore it now defines the whole day. Well, Taisus says, no, the whole day it's really muktzah, but I have a specific built-in heter to use it for the mitzvah. So the Achrayim have a... I would assume so. But the Achrayim...
It's a real minhag, right?
I mean, yeah, even though it's not real. So the Achrayim have two interesting kashas I saw brought down in two different svarim. First of all, what would the guy do if he gets an aliyah? Would he be allowed to put it down?
Doesn't even happen.
So they have a kasha, let's say you got a duchen. What happens then? So they bring down in many svarim that you'd give it to another guy. If you look at Lashon Yushalmi, what was his Lashon? Hinichu ala ha'aretz. So the medayik from this Yushalmi, that if you give it to your friend, it's still in play. You know, it's like when the clock winds down in football, as long as you pass it to someone else, the clock still goes. So here also, lahavdil. Over here, as long as it doesn't go on the ground. Once it doesn't go, it's okay as long as it goes to your friend.
But why should it matter? Once
the chayr, it doesn't make too much sense. Why should it matter? The fact that I pass it on to someone else, now it's in your hands. Well, what type of heter is that? So I talk to the Sefer called Chemdes Daniel. Michael, who are Chemdes Daniel?
Is that Daniel Kleiman?
Nope. Daniel Erfeld, come on.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're right.
Chemdes Daniel's
right. Brown Sefer.
Daniel Erfeld from Eretz Yisrael writes this in his Sefer. He's Mayer Diskasha.
What's his relationship
to Yaakov Erfeld? His uncle. He's
Rosh Yivan
Beis.
He's Rosh Yivan Beis. Yeah. So he wrote a Sefer called Chemdes Daniel. So he's Mayer Diskasha also in his Sefer. He says, I don't get it. How does it help to pass it? I only asked because I knew you weren't paying attention.
I know.
So like back in school again. It's like, it's a kasha because it doesn't make sense. How does it help to give it to someone else? The chayr of the pshat is that once it's in my hands, it's a continuation of the mitzvah, which we'll talk more about this from the nitziv. Right? The chayr, you can sometimes ask a kasha. Let's say I hold the lulav in my hand for the next 2 days straight. And I never put it down. That's mutter. But the mitzvah's over. If the mitzvah's over, that should be too late.
But it's called Yisroel, I remember. Yeah, so you're giving it to somebody else doing
it. But again, I'm Pasha's giving it to someone else, not to do the mitzvah. I'm giving it to someone else because I got to run now to get my aliyah. I got to go duchen. I'm a kohen. The guy next to me is Yisroel, so I got to get rid of this. I know it's hot potato. I can't put it on the ground because then I won't be able to take it home. So what do I do? I give it to my friend. So what does that do exactly? How does him holding it different than me putting it on the ground? So we'll see. The Nitziv has a suggestion, perhaps, that when I put it down, that's like a statement of it's over. You know, you put it over.
Is that like the chomp pot on Friday night or something?
Yeah, I guess it's a different type of rabbanon over there. But yeah, there's a certain type of feeling when you leave go of something that you're really disconnecting from it. Imagine when I give it to someone else to hold, I would love to continue to hold it, but I can't because I have to go and my hands need to be used. But we'll see if that makes so much sense. But that's the chayra. That's correct. But but even if it's a klisha malach talis, so where's the tzarech gufa tzarech mekayma?
So he.
Yeah, that's a more complicated Vilna Gaon, which at some point we'll have to talk about. Yeah, I was trying to. So he argues this. Rabbi Lerfeld writes, maybe it's a tzarech mekayma because I need my hand. I got to get rid of the luv because I need my hand to duchen, right? So I got to get rid of the klisha matlu out of my hand. But it doesn't. That's A and B. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that he could hold it. Meaning I got to get rid of it. Doesn't mean your hand now becomes a makam to deposit it. So he has this discussion over there as well. But the nitziv.
They invented these luluf holders with the straps so you could.
I wonder what would happen in such a case. I wonder if that's still considered that you never were meniachit. I think that's an interesting idea. It's always attached to me. Because again, the lashon of Yerushalmi.
It's not during laning, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you take it off, you're not holding it the whole time.
Right, most of us don't want to hold it. So the nitziv has a piece over here in Meshiv Dover. Yeah, usually we put it down. So the Nitziv has an interesting piece over here in Meshiv Dover where he writes, it says in Yerushalmi that once you put it on the ground, you're not allowed to move it because of muktzah. The mitzvah. That's Zokta Nitziv. That's all talking about. That's talking about on Shabbos. This Yerushalmi, Zokta Nitziv, was on Shabbos. On Shabbos, when they used to take lulav on Shabbos and they had muktzah, that's what it was. Masha enkein b'yomtav shechol b'choil. Zokten etziv, but avad if it's a regular Tuesday, ein al halulav iser totokal. There is no prohibition to move the lulav. Now, with all due respect, the Magen Avraham quotes this Yerushalmi. The Magen Avraham is not talking about Shabbos because we don't take lulav on Shabbos. When the Magen Avraham quotes this Yerushalmi, he means on yomtav. He doesn't mean on Shabbos. Yet the Netziv and others, possibly the Vilna Gaon, assumed the Yerushalmi was not talking about yomtav. It's talking about Shabbos. Shabbos shechol yis sukkos. Not talking about a regular yomtav. Why says the Netziv in Meshiv Dover? Given the biyomtav shel sukkos mitzvah se belulav, since the whole mitzvah is to shake on lulav, the havik yishad tzorchi yomtav. Mishamachim motel tatla afilu achashenyach. You're even allowed to move it after you talk. This whole din is only on Shabbos. So now the obvious kash is, well, what's the difference? Shabbos, you have the mitzvah. Yom Tov, you have the mitzvah. Shabbos has muktzah. Yom Tov has muktzah. What exactly is the major difference? So we'll see in Meremi HaSodeh, another sefer written by the Nitziv, he explains it perhaps a little bit more. I'm not so sure if he does. But says the Nitziv, he says, Elo shechazrani b'mahadenicha sh'asal tatla. He says, I retracted what I wrote in Emek Shela. On his commentary to the Shiltas, the Nitziv wrote Emek Shela on the Shiltas. And there he wrote one svar, and here he's saying, I'm taking it back. Why? He says, I took it back. Because after Shem, what I read in Shiltas, Tohod Rashay Lachaz Bo'koz Man Shalenichu, why was it taka that you're allowed to keep it in your hand as long as you don't put it down? Frekt and Nitziv, we learned last week that the Ramah says in Shulchan Aruch that by the Vilna Gaon holds by a Moyle's knife. What do you do right after the meal is over on Shabbos? Drop it, hot potato. And yet here, I'm allowed to keep it in my hands until I put it down. What's the difference? So the Nitziv over there wrote in a mikshela, he wrote Mishum Navi Mitzvah Atshem Enichoy, because the mitzvah of Lulav continues until you put it down. And once you put it down, that's the end point. That's how the Nitziv understood Lulav. Mashenki Ramila, holding the knife of the Moel doesn't do much. The mitzvah's over. The mitzvah is the chaticha. The fact that you're holding the knife, there's no more mitzvah. Says the Nitziv, but V'ata Chazrani Bi. Now I'm changing my mind. I'm retracting. El Afilu Enichol Oret. Even if you were to put it on the ground, let's say I put it down, but I have das lachzer. I plan on picking it up. I don't want to end the mitzvah. I'm putting it down. I need to go to the bathroom. I need to go for duchening. I need to get an aliyah. I'm not putting it down because I'm saying, oh, I'm done with it. I'm putting it down, and I have daite lachzer. Tired in itziv, if the hope shot was by putting it down, you're ending the experience, so daite lachzer should work.
Now, it makes sense because it's a mitzvah that could continue.
Right.
Bris, you can never go back to it.
That's right.
How much mitzvah is there?
Clearly, and Jewish Shlaim used to walk around the whole day with it. So you see, there's some significance to holding the lulav in your esrog in your hands. Now, yesh lodin, does that mean it's a mitzvah kiyumis versus a mitzvah chiyuvis? Meaning the mitzvah is to shake it once, and now every additional shake, right? So now every additional taking, perhaps is another mitzvah. I'm not obligated, but every taking, we'll talk more about this next week.
You make a bracha if you put it down.
Yeah. We're going to talk about this next week when we get to matzah. Hopefully, we're going to talk about the vol negoyin in the in 7 days matzah. Is every single bite of matzah you eat throughout the Pesach mitzvah? Because if you looked in this week's parsha, it sounds like yes, you're supposed to eat matzah for 7 days. That's what it says in the Torah.
Doesn't Rashi say that it's only the first days of
Chiyuv? I understand. I'm saying the Torah sounds not like that. The Torah says eat matzah for 7 days. If I was just a Bible Jew and I just read the Chumash, that would be my conclusion. But we know that the first night's obligatory. After that, it's up to you. You want to eat, you know, potato Pesach cookies for the rest of the Yom Tov, you can do that. Some of them taste a lot better than the matzah, but that's up to you. The first night you have to. The rest of that, it's rishos. But does that mean if I decide to eat it, I'm yaitzeh mitzvah? We'll have to get into that famous Vilna Gaon Bli Neder next week. Yeah.
So when you put it down, it ends. What happens the next day?
So the next day, the mitzvah comes back, and the mitzvah pushes. That's what we're going to get to a little later. Hopefully today. When does the mitzvah start? So we know mitzvah start either at Alois HaShachar, Neitz HaChama, but let's say you daven at an Eitz Minyan, and you get up early to learn, and you want to learn in shul, so you take your lulav with you. By the time you leave your house, it's before Alois HaShachar. Are you allowed to bring your lulav with you? Chayra not. It's muktzah. Can't shake a lulav now. Muktzah. You could argue and say it's not muktzah, because it's a chanel mitzvah. So the same way the mitzvah is pushed away because muktzah loses to the mitzvah, so hachanel mitzvah works as well. I hear it. I can hear such an argument. We'll see that the Chareinim discuss it.
So this is Yontif.
This is Yontif. Straight up Yontif. Again, people, I think, lose sight on this Shiloh. Whenever Sukkot rolls around, we talk about everything else under the sun. It's a great time to talk about, you know, what's the status of a lulav on Sukkot. People look at you like you fell off the face of the
earth. Why would it be different than a moil carrying a knife on Yontif?
He might have the same problem, right? The same shadow would come up.
Could you carry
it
for a friend of yours?
Right?
That's
yeah.
You
never know.
You
may
have
come across another breast. There's no.
He doesn't need to hold a knife.
That the mitzvah is over. You could possibly come across another breast.
So then the mitzvah will knock away the muktzah. But until you have a mitzvah fanenu, it stays back to muktzah.
That's because you have the mitzvah fanenu.
Right. The question is, if I already did the mitzvah, I already put it down. I come home after shul, I put it down on the dining room table. And now my wife says, you know, it's raining, we're eating inside, move the lulav. So everyone, no problem, move the lulav, it's yomtiv, do whatever you want with the lulav. Perhaps, or perhaps not. Perhaps it really is muktzah.
I think it's almost like, there's almost like the concept of you start the thing.
That's Rashi will tell you. Taisus will argue and says the whole thing is it's the whole lulav is a muktzah. It's a heter dikah muktzah.
It's like it's not possible.
Why? After
because you think of all the different things and putting it out. I gotta bring the
shul.
It's not.
Okay, so the assumption might be that we don't paskin like this Taisus. Now the truth is that if you noticed, I quoted a Magen Avraham who quoted Daki Moshe. The Rama wrote another sefer called Rama on Shulchan Aruch. It's not in that sefer. If you look in Hilchas Lulav, in the Ramah, he doesn't write it. So that leads us to believe perhaps he doesn't hold of it. Or that the whole Yushalmi is only talking about Yom Tif Shechaliyah Espeshabbos, to which it's not Negev, because we're not picking it up in the first place. So Halacha L'maisa, I don't think this, well, we'll talk more about it. I don't want to give away the ending yet. But from strictly Halacha L'maisa, it is a Darkei Moshe, it is a Magen Avraham, but it's not found in Ramah and Shulchan Aruch. So that's always like a little bit of a red flag. What do you make from that, from the fact that the Ramah didn't put it into Shulchan Aruch? Perhaps he doesn't think it's Halacha L'maisa. Yeah.
You say that many people hold that Mitzvah is the Laila also, but it's just that you can't do it.
But that would be the lumdish way of saying it. Yeah, we'll come back to that hopefully in a few minutes. So if you look over here, what? You told me about this Tosis, right? And I didn't find it. Where is it? What daf?
I don't know
either. Okay. Well, I have a project now to find it. I don't know. I'm not sure. So if you look over here in the Meraymi Sada, which was also the Netziv, right? The Netziv wrote a lot of Gishmakas Svarim. Emek Shel, I think he wrote on the Shiltas when he was like 19 or something. He was quite young when he wrote his first Sefer on the Shiltas. And then he wrote Merim Yisodeh, he wrote other Gishmakas Svarim. So the Netziv ended up being a son-in-law by the Aruch HaShulchan. I've said all this story many times. The Netziv ended up marrying the Aruch HaShulchan's daughter. The Netziv was a brother-in-law to the Aruch HaShulchan. The Netziv had a first wife, she died. And he was already an older man. And the Aruch HaShulchan had a daughter who got married. And she didn't like her husband. She thought he wasn't enough of a big Talmud Chacham. She thought he didn't know how to learn well enough. So she decided she's running away from him. She's leaving him.
Did she get a get?
She got a get, and that was fine. But she was a, who wants... So she needed someone who was a big Torah scholar. So she had an uncle who was the Netziv. The Netziv was her uncle. So she said, I'll marry the Netziv. The Netziv was much older already. Much older. To marry your uncle?
Yeah,
uncle. Yeah, so the auntie can't marry. Amram was the problem. It's it might even, there's a shayla about Yiba, maybe Taisha talks about
it. You marry your niece, you're saying?
Yeah, sure. It might even be a mitzvah to marry your niece. So the Torah Tumima was the birth of that marriage. The Torah Tumima was the Aruch HaShulchan's son, but he was, the Torah Tumima was the son of the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan, the Torah Tumima often writes that my uncle, the Netziv, my brother-in-law, the Netziv. So who was born from the marriage of the Netziv and the Aruch HaShulchan? From the second marriage?
Meir
Berlin. Who was Meir Bar Ilan? That's a more popular name. From the Netziv and the Aruch HaShulchan's daughter, that marriage produced Meir Bar Ilan. That was the son that came from that marriage. The Aruch HaShulchan's daughter was young, but his father was much older. Supposedly the Netziv used to learn with his son. They had a lot of interaction with each other. The Aruch HaShulchan used to learn with him a lot. There was a lot of, whether or not hashkafically they saw eye to eye, I can't tell you that, but that came from that marriage. So nonetheless, the Netziv, so his second wife was the Aruch HaShulchan's daughter. So the Netziv writes, Meremi HaSada in Sukkah, he also quotes this Yushalmi. And he says what he repeated earlier in Meshav Dava. Ub Yushami Sukkah Paragimel Tanya. Hey Nuchu Baritz Asal Tata. This Yushami that says that once you put the lulav on the ground, you're not allowed to move it. Ukar Hikshu Adaki Moshav Amagan Avram. Everyone has a kasha. Ain Muktzal Chatsiyim. Veli Nira Barzok Netziv. Everyone missed the boat. The Hasa Mari B'Shabbos B'Yom Rishon. That Yushalmi is talking about Shabbos Shecholias Pesukis. The Be'em is Muktzav. It's really Muktzav. Lo Shari El Mitam Dichui. It's only Mutar Al Dichui. Umishomachi Kozman Shachar Reu Mitzvah. Afagav Shekvar Yotzi Dichavasa. Even though you already did the Mitzvah, Hakol Mitzvah Achasi. Mashiach and Achas Sheniach. Once you put it down, Kol HaMitzvah the Mitzvah ends. Avo Kozeh Hu B'Shabbos. That's only on Shabbos. Al Mashiach can be Yomtiv. She Mitzvah Sehi. On Yomtiv it is a Mitzvah. Al Aluluv. He Al Aluluv. She Muktzah. Ain Muktzah Shem Klal. Now, I don't get the difference. Yeah, I don't understand the difference. There's a mitzvah on Shabbos also. Shabbos Shecholi Yisukkah also has a mitzvah. I almost don't understand exactly the difference. So, I don't know how the Netziv differentiated.
Maybe because it's a lesser mitzvah, because the Rabbanim made a example you can't do it on Shabbos. Not because of mukzah, because you can't carry it.
Right, but
we don't do that mitzvah.
Right, Yushalmi was talking about in the beginning.
So it was just a
mukzah issue. Like the Gemara says in Sukkah, just mukzah. So I don't know. You're gonna have to tell me some svara that be'etzim the first day of Sukkot is really Sukkot and Shabbos is a side thing as opposed to vice versa. I don't get the mitzvah schiluk. I really don't understand it. They're both the same. They both have a mitzvah and they both have muktzah. So if muktzah pushes, muktzah doesn't. I don't know why the nitziv thinks it should make a difference.
Could you explain how does the concept of ein muktzah
l'chatz
yom work? Like for instance,
if the kli was roi when Shabbos came or yomtiv came, so that's roi the whole yomtiv. So if you tell me I can shake a lulav in the morning, so then it can't be muktzah after the morning.
Or before, just, at night.
Or before, which we'll get to in a second.
That's the following shas. That something cannot become
like every cloud has probably a lot of exceptions.
So one thing, so how does the moral's life become mukso then, according to
that? That's the same shaila. That's the same question, right? That's the same argument. Whether or not the moral's life will also have a problem with a mukso chatsiyim. The Ramo.
Designated the thing with shoshos, then that status goes
without. So that's what I want to tie now. I want to tie now the machlokes Rashi and Tosfos might be this nakuda. Maybe we keep on trying to figure out why does Rashi hold that a lulav is a kli and Taisus holds it can't be a kli. Maybe Taisus holds because when Bein HaShemashes comes, it's not yet royal mitzvah. Because there's no mitzvah Bein HaShemashes. The mitzvah first starts in the morning. So maybe even though Taisus agrees to Rashi that being used for a mitzvah makes it a kli, but when Shabbos came, it didn't have the mitzvah. Rashi has bigger vision. Rashi says, well, since in 12 hours from now it's going to be mitzvah, that's genuk shay now. Taisus will tell you, no, right now, Bein HaShemash is on Erev Sukkot, Sunday evening, there is no mitzvah now. There'll be a mitzvah tomorrow morning, good, there'll be a mitzvah tomorrow morning. So perhaps Taisus holds that I can't be making a kli to have a shame kli because of the osit. Maybe Rashi holds it can be. So it could be that's the machlokes Rashi and Taisus. The machlokes Rashi and Taisus is not the way everyone else says it. Whether or not mitzvah makes it a dover ha-kli. The machlokes is deeper than that. The machlokes is, if right now there's no mitzvah, but there will be a mitzvah, will that be sufficient to give it a shame kli, even though now there's no mitzvah? Perhaps that might be pshat, the machlokes Rashi and Taisus. There's a machaber in Shulchan Aruch, number 6, which seems to be very interesting based on the fact that we now know the entire background of the Gemara. What does the Shulchan Aruch write? Mekabelas isha ha-lulav miyad b'na. A lady is allowed to take the lulav from her son, oy miyad baylo, umachziros lemaim. She's allowed to put it back into the water. So to Mishnah Berurah. This is a Mishnah. We learned this Mishnah last week. Says the Mishnah Berurah, afal gav de ein chayeves belulav. Even though a lady is not obligated to lulav, mikom mokam rashayla toitli. She's allowed to move it. So let's not read the last three words of the Mishnah Berurah. Why would a lady be allowed to move a lulav? So the answer would be, because since Rashi told us in Sukkah, since already it's a mitzvah for a man, it's a mitzvah for a lady. It's not muktzah for a man, it's not muktzah for a lady. What does Mishnah Berurah write? Why is she allowed to move it? Tegam hi rashai levarach alof. What? That has nothing to do with anything. Because she's allowed to make a brach on it? That's not what Rashi said in Sukkah. What did Rashi say in Sukkah? It's not mukta for a lady because it's not mukta for a man. That's what Rashi said. So since it's not mukta for a lady, it's not mukta for a man.
Not it's the same thing. It's not mukta for a man because it's a mitzvah, so it's not mukta for a lady.
But it's not.
So you can make a bracha on it.
Yeah, but that's not.
I mean, the, it's a,
it needs to be a mitzvah.
Right? I'm saying, right. It didn't sound like, according to Rashi, the point is because she is involved in the mitzvah. The point is that things don't become mukta from person to person. If it's mukta, that's what I would have thought. Mukta. That's what we learned Rashi when we saw Rashi last week. What did Mr. Brewer mean by these words? I don't know.
Because machaber, a woman can't make a
problem. That's problem number two. This statement of the Gamhi Rashai Levarach Lav is a huge machlekes Rishayim. Many Rishayim, predominantly the Sfadish Rishayim, hold that she can't make a bracha. So if the whole heta for a lady to move a lulav is because of bracha, so Sfadish ladies can't move a lulav on Sukkos? That's going to come out of Lachol Maisa. Very hard to understand.
It's interesting that she said bracha as opposed to putting kapit
in the mitzvah. Brachas are what? What does a bracha represent? So it could be bracha represents a kiyum mitzvah. Meaning, if I can make a bracha on this procedure, I mean this procedure is either an obligatory mitzvah or a mitzvah fulfilled. At least I did something.
It could be a rishus.
It could still be rishus, but at least I get a check. That's the whole machlokes rishonim, whether or not women can make a bracha on a mitzvah. It's tali and they don't have a chiyuv, but perhaps they have a kiyum. So what is the mishnah? I probably don't understand the words of the mishnah Beru. That's not the nekuda because she can make a bracha. The point is not because of the bracha. The point is l'chayir because it has a shem mutzah. Says the Sharet Zion. Number right under it, he writes Ois Aleph, the second Aleph. Hu lefi min hagenu. That comment of the Mishnah Berurah was only for us Ashkenazi Jews. Vafilu dasa machmirim v'sayim de'ein levarech, de'ein rashad levarech. Machash and chayevis. Aye, what do you do with all those women who hold those poskim hold ladies can't make a bracha? Mikom bokem rashay letatlei hu hoyol ve'ika toiras kli alav legabe anoshim because it has a shame kli for men. So zok the late. So later, Achrein and Taina, so you see the Mishnah Berurah passes like Rashi. So if the Mishnah Berurah passes like Rashi, what would Rashi hold the status of a lulav on Yom Tov is? It's not Muktzah. So according to Rashi, would I be able to put my lulav down and pick it up later? Yes, you can. Now, that's fine, I guess. I just don't know what the Mishnah Berurah meant when he said, the Gami Rashi Levarach. That's not the point. The point is because you hold like Rashi. So Lechaira, it sounds like from the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah is passing like Rashi. That a lulav is not Muktzah. A lulav is not Muktzah on Yom Tov. Shabbos, we don't know about, that we spoke about before. But according to this, it comes out that a lulav is taka not muktza. I, the Yushalmi, says that once I put it down, I'm not allowed to pick it up. Okay, we don't pass me with Yushalmi.
Just backing up something you said 3 minutes ago, is this no concept that something that could be muktza for you is not muktza? Once it's not muktza for you, it's not muktza for anyone. If you set aside eight for Evan to hold your door open, but I have no concept of it, and I didn't set
that's a big question.
Am I allowed to pick up that eight? How do I know that you meant it yourself?
So that Rashi and Sukkah sounds like that once the Rashi sounds like that we're defining the status of this lulav. Lulav on Yom Tov are defined as not muktzah because they have a kli for a large population of the world, the Hainu men. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure where how far this goes.
Why
I don't know.
Why the Shulchan Aruch have to mention Matzurah Solomai?
Because that's the chiddush in the mission over there that we didn't get into, but that's a separate chiddush of putting it back into the water, issues of causing it to grow and things like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's a separate. That's now halacha mais. This should be a shayla that should bother all of us. Again, now that we have this Rashi and Tosfos, right? So l'chayra, according to Tosfos, once you're done with the lulav, you arguably can't even take it home from shul, unless you tell him I'm taking it home for my wife. Maybe that's a chesed. But l'chayra, the lulav is muktzah. Lulav is muktzah. You can't move it. So it says Reb Shlomo Zalman number 9. It's a little bit musar. Also, he writes esroyim sheyachtum baleim lemitzvah asurim betiltu b'shabbos. So he does not paskin like the you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos. Ulam b'yomtiv mutar betiltu. You're allowed to move it on Yom Tov. What's the chiddush? So the chiddush is not like the Yerusham. He writes in the bottom, "V'hainu bein b'lel yom tov u'bein b'yoyimo." Oh, that's a different question. Even if you'll accept Rashi and say that a lulav is not muktzah on yom tov because it has a shei mitzvah, what about the night before Sukkos? What about then? I can hear someone making the argument that even in Rashi's world that it has a shei kli on Sukkos, that's on Sukkos. The night before is the night before. It's not, you can't use a mitzvah. There's no mitzvah now. If you shake lulav the night before, you're not yetzir. L'kachtem lechem b'yoyim. It's got to be during the day. No, the esrig is different. Yes, the Ramah writes esrig is different because you can smell it. But the later Achrayim disagree. They say today we don't use esrig for smelling; they're very expensive. If you want to smell something, it's a lot cheaper things to buy. So today, so that's a shayla about an esrig. But the lulav itself, the night before Sukkot, the lulav is useless. I need it for tomorrow. So again, you could argue, and this is the case of Shlomo Zalman makes, is that's enough. Meaning it becomes a kli now because it's going to be a kli tomorrow.
That's
the shayla.
It's a chesed shel mitzvah, even though I practically
cannot be yotzei the mitzvah, but that's it. That tesva of nisan, it has status.
But again, yesh lodon. How do you learn Rashi? If according to Rashi, why does a lulav become a shame kli? So Rashi sounds like in sukkah because of the mitzvah. Does that mean the practical tzivui ha-mitzvah? Or does that mean the whole ability to do a mitzvah? That's what we spoke about earlier. Let's say you'd have a 3-day yomtiv and you bought the lulav on Shabbos, and then you go, what was the case again? Shabbos, and then yomtiv started on Sunday night. So what would the status be? Even Matzei Shabbos. Friday. Right, you bought it Friday, so now Shabbos comes. So now there's no practical mitzvah, but this is the only time to get the lulav ready to do the mitzvah. Well, let's say Yom Tov starts Matzei Shabbos.
Matzei Shabbos.
It can't fall out. It can't fall out that way, right? But that's a question of Achanim. I'm talking about just in the Lomas of Mukta, how far do we go? So Shlomo Zalman thinks the night before is okay. And he writes, V'chei noigim u'metatlam ha'esrug v'alulav gam b'lo Yom Tov afil shlo l'tzerach kima mitzvah. I guess he means to say, let's say, for example, I need to bring it to shul, and I can't bring it to shul the next morning, I want to bring it to shul the night before. So Dr. Shlomo Zalman, that's okay. He bavarns our kasha. What he means to say is, Rashi in Sukkah says that the whole reason why lulav is not mukta is because it has the mitzvah, but there's no mitzvah tonight. So Dr. Shlomo Zalman, no. Because of mitzvah, now it's a kli, right now. It doesn't need to be tomorrow. I think that nekud is what Taisus argues. I think that's what they say is not true. It will be a kli tomorrow. It's not a kli today.
Do you have that hakir of the Shabbos? No, in other words, wear talis on Shabbos. Dafka for the, whatever, 9 to 11 or 12, whatever.
Yeah, but a talis is a beged.
Right, so but it's a beged that's the dafka for Shabbos.
Right, but it's an independent beged. It could be worn, you could use it as a blanket if push comes to shove. This is useless for anything else. So he writes in the bottom an interesting vort. He says, V'chein hayra bal peh, Shlomo Zalman used to tell this to people, V'hoysef l'sabbos yadu shagayin b'yosef zanda salant, hayu menanei ha'lulav mina b'yomtov mib'oid layla. B'yosef salanta used to shake his lulav at night. Why? K'dei shehi rogel ba'avoid l'macharis. He should prepare for tomorrow. V'amayin he'd say, she'aleinu lulman m'chukei umais. We gotta learn from the goyim. She'an she'had tzava m'shmeres ha'malachim, margilam atzim harbi b'chol tachsisei ha'luchum v'tenu asam. You go to battle the next morning, you don't just wake up the next morning. You spend the night before, you're playing with your guns, and you want to make sure you have it all ready, and you know how to shoot, you know what to do. He says, Kadesha be'ez ha'avoid, you b'dikuk muslim. You want to have it perfect. You don't just start practicing the morning. You prepare the night before. V'alachas kam v'kam v'shaleinu l'hargo atzmenu l'daktik b'yoyser, b'seidin anun ne'halul v'minov, she'u ha'avoid g'doyli atzmenu, b'chol tenua v'tenua. Very nice Musa Hashkafa, but it's Yesh Lodan on it. It's not a mitzvah.
And also, let's do every mitzvah beforehand to practice it.
Yeah, not so many
mitzvahs. Let's eat matzah. No, that's about. Let's eat matzah of Pesach to see if I can digest it.
Yeah, but then the mitzvah is just to put it into. This is very nice Hashkafa, but let's get back to the issue at hand. In Lomdus, Yesh Lodan, right? In Lomdus, if the only reason why this branch becomes not muktzah is because of the mitzvah, I don't have a mitzvah tonight. So I can hear one arguing on Mishlam Mizalman's Chiddush. Mishlam Mizalman saying that, no, it's muktzah, it's not muktzah l'chatzayim. I mean, what Mishlam Mizalman is really telling you is it can't be muktzah l'chatzayim. If it's muktzah tonight, it can't be muktzah tomorrow. Taisus will tell you, no, it's muktzah tonight, it's not muktzah tomorrow. Now, if you hold, so here's the question, what would Mishlam Mizalman tell you tomorrow after you finish taking the lulav? Does Yushami then kick back in? I don't know. The night before, you can tell me it's achana l'mitzvah. What about after the mitzvah? What would Mishlam Mizalman tell you from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock? Well, then the Yushami kicked back in. We threw out the Yushami a long time ago.
The
Pshad and the Yushami is Amin. And we'll see, that's the way Moshe Sternberg holds this way also. And the Pshad, it's a Kli. It's a Kli now. It's a Kli for the duration of the day. That's the way these Achrayim assume that it doesn't lose the shame Kli. Okay, Mitzvah, next week we'll move on to talk about a little bit more about Dalaminim. Then we'll start to talk about Matzah. We'll talk about Matzah and the elements of that. Yeah.
Why would you say that the...